Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I have to admit that even for me, there are times when I think, well, you launch a business and you can sell it any time. And it's so easy if it's done right, you know? But the truth is that most businesses last, especially if you do it right, for years and years and years. And the sell-off, the payoff, the freedom that you hope for when you think I'm going to start a business so I can get financial freedom is so far in the future that it's hard to count on. And that's what today's story shows. Joining me is an entrepreneur who started his company, get this, back in 1999. Through that period of raising money, changing the world, being changed by the world, there was a lot of evolution, a lot of, frankly, hope you don't take this the wrong way, coming from Germany, slapdowns. I feel like the environment, the world slapped you guys down quite a bit, and you stood up, and I want to understand how you did it. Eckhart Ortwein is the founder of several companies, but the company we're going to focus on today is a company called Paybox Solutions. They set out to make money mobile back at the time when PayPal did, really, launched around the same time. They decided people should be able to pass money to each other, to businesses using mobile phones. That world exists today, but back then it was ahead of its time. They raised money and we'll find out what happened, but I'll cut to the end and tell you that they did sell the business to Sybase for, well, I've got it here, but I'll help him tell you. Today he's working on a business called Lean Case, which we'll talk a little bit about because I think it's useful for every entrepreneur who's listening to me. What they do is they help you plot out your company's financial model. Most people do this in spreadsheets, lay out where their income is going to be, where their expenses are going to be. He has this vision that they should be using a tool that's made for this, for developing your business case. It's called Lean Case. We'll talk a little bit about that. All thanks to two phenomenal sponsors. Eckhart, people have heard me talk about these sponsors forever, but there's a reason why they keep hearing it. It's that the ads work. People are actually going over, and when they need a website hosted, they go to hostgator.com/Mixergy. And when they're ready to hire the best of the best developers, not only do they hire from TopTal, but I've been noticing even on Twitter when somebody says, I'm looking for a developer, I'm working through this process, my audience will tweet back at them and say, hey, why don't you go check out TopTal? Andrew's recommending them. But I'll tell everyone about those later. Eckhart, first, I'll welcome you and say good to have you here.
Good evening, Andrew here, and thank you for your nice introduction and on the slapdown. So we're getting on to that.
I'm looking at articles here, including this one from Network World from 2009, talking about how Sybase acquired mobile payment player Paybox Solutions. I don't see how much they acquired you for here. What was the acquisition price?
The acquisition was about $15 million.
$15 million. Do you remember the day that you signed that contract or that the money came in? You do?
Obviously, yeah. It was December 31st, 2008.
Wow.
That was a good New Year's Eve after almost 10 years of hard work.
What did you do to, if not celebrate, to at least mark the occasion?
Well, I think we took a vacation to the coast in the winter, and I just relaxed for 10 days because the due diligence had been so hard, and it had been an ongoing process for 9 months selling the company to Sybase, and was just and before Christmas they had a call and they said, well, if that doesn't happen, the deal might not happen. Christmas was a bit stressed, but then yeah, so I was really relaxed that evening.
I bet. I understand that the way you got into entrepreneurship is you worked at Procter & Gamble, and this experience sent you to Silicon Valley to consult. And Silicon Valley changed you. What were you doing in Silicon Valley?
Yeah, actually, I started at Procter & Gamble, and then I worked for a consulting company, Arthur DeLittle, at that time, which was BCG was a spinoff. Arthur DeLittle was from Boston.
Okay.
They sent me to Palo Alto, and we had a research office there, and people from coming really from all over the world. And we were taking like the German corporates like Lufthansa or Volkswagen. We were taking them to Silicon Valley in 98, the year of and there was an El Nino and there was Monica Lewinsky. And we were taking them to Silicon Valley to show how the startups in Silicon Valley were working.
Oh, Arthur Little, the management consulting company, brought German businesses to Silicon Valley to show them how the world was working in the tech sector here.
Exactly.
Got it. And then what was in it for the tech companies? Why did the tech companies invite all these businesses in?
Well, for example, there was a big project for Lufthansa at that point in time, and they were looking for technology for the alliance with United. And so the vendors we picked and that we visited were all potential suppliers, for example, for those kinds of projects.
Okay. So there was potential partnership, potential clients coming from this. And so what was it that led you to start your own company then? What was it about this experience?
Well, obviously working with the startups and getting that atmosphere of working in Silicon Valley and not with stiff German corporates.
Is there one company that was especially meaningful that way that you looked at internally and said, wow, this is a new world?
Well, I remember Vitria. That was a middleware company.
Okay.
And Vitria was, yeah, they went, they went public. Yep.
So what was it about them that attracted you? What was it that made you change who you were?
It was the entire approach. It was the technology. It was the way you could use the technology. It was their way of presenting it. It was their way of selling it. Everything was just, well, spot on and really nice.
Got it. And brand new from the beginning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All like a whole new way of thinking, whole new way of doing things.
And the way they put together the team was very experienced. They all had their different competencies, and it was very impressive. I was very impressed.
So then where did the idea for payments come from?
Well, the idea came from my friend who actually founded the company. So I was his co-founder. He was also in Arthur Little at that point in time. And he came up with that idea on an overseas flight in the middle of the night, somewhere over the Atlantic. He thought, well, we have to improve payments and the mobile phones are there. Why don't we use the mobile phones for it?
And mobile phones back then, we're talking about those old things that were called the candy bar phone, right? Which is a small phone with just the 10 digits plus the star and pound or the flip phone. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, the only thing they could do was actually doing voice calls and sending SMS. That's what they could do.
And he thought, we need to make these into payments. And why did you believe that that would work? Why did you believe it was even necessary?
The payments, you could already see a lot of fraud and the internet was coming and you could see credit card fraud on the internet. And was that also the same reason why actually PayPal got up, and you needed a good way of authenticating a payment and securing a payment. Okay. And you could do it with a phone call. And the idea was just very simple. I went to the merchant website, and instead of entering my credit card number and entered my phone number, and I pressed, I want to pay this merchant. And then I got a phone call, and the phone call would say, hey, this is the paybox of Eckhard Ortwein. And so I heard my name as a security thing. Yep. You want to pay to the merchant Mixergy the amount of $49 for a wonderful subscription. And then I said, well, I heard all this. Yeah, I just pressed this button and I said, we entered my PIN. And then the PIN was verified and obviously the transaction was processed.
And so it wasn't that people were giving the credit card number over the phone. It was that they were being authenticated over the phone.
They were being authenticated over the phone and they didn't have to give their credit card number to the merchant. They only had to give their phone number to the merchant.
Got it. And that, because you would take the credit card over the phone?
Well, the credit card was stored or the payment or the bank account details were stored in our system. They were only stored securely once in our system.
And on the web.
Yeah.
Okay. So you imagine people would go and create an account on your site, put their credit card information one time, and then from then on, when they needed to make a payment, instead of retyping it in, they get a phone call saying, hey, Eckhart, do you want to authenticate this? Do you want to authorize this? And you'd go through it. Got it. All right. That's an interesting idea. It's an interesting take. Let's talk about that, the first version. You told our producer, I built an MVP, minimum viable product, which is interesting because this predates, Eric Ries and the Lean Startup. What was your minimum viable product?
Well, the minimum viable product was actually between two phones. And you can use, I would basically play, also you were playing the merchant, right? And you were calling into a paybox number and you were then entering my phone number and the amount.
When you say you mean, so the minimum viable product was you got two different phones and you You pretended one was being held by a customer and the other was owned by a business that the customer wanted to buy from, the merchant. Okay, correct. So what did you set up? The customer would do what?
The customer would call in into the number.
Yep.
He was asked by the IVR machine, and was asked, from whom do you want to request money? So mm-hmm. he had to type in my phone number. And then he said, the second question was, how much do you want to ask for? And you would enter $49. And then the transaction would, like from the internet, the transaction would go to us. And we would call on the customer's phone. And the customer would say, hey, this is the paybox of Eckhart. Do you want to, same authentication process.
Got so it.
Same way. And that was something we built in probably a month.
Was there software involved in this? There was.
There was software. There was special software involved, I remember, from Envox at that time that could facilitate these things.
What were you trying to prove? The reason people create minimum viable products is to see what that first prototype, that first version would look like. But it's also to prove something, to see if something is possible. What were you trying to test?
Well, we were really trying to test the whole process. And I mean, it was early days of internet.
To see if it was technically possible or to see if consumers would understand it or if businesses would use it.
Both technical feasibility. We didn't really know how long it would take to receive the call. It was basically immediate. And then to also have the experience, right? Test it with consumers, and we tested a lot and go out to raise money from investors.
But you talked to investors before you even talked to merchants because you wanted to make sure that you had something strong enough for merchants to incorporate into their payment.
Absolutely, because payment, if you go out with a payment proposition, it's always about the chicken and egg problem, right?
Right.
Merchants so that you can acquire consumers and yeah.
But still, I think in retrospect, it might have made more sense to talk to merchants too, right? Don't you agree? To see with merchants, would you want this, to have them say, if you built this, we would sign up, so that you can go to investors and say, I actually have a plan that customers would like and merchants will sign up for.
Well, it was so brand new. I think that's why we said, okay, let's immediately raise money from investors. But at that point in time, that was the right timing also. Today you would do it differently. I agree with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. And let's also be clear that 1999 was the height of a lot of money being thrown around to new companies. And so you said, all right, let's jump in. And you were one of the last ones to get it, right?
Exactly. We were a bit behind this big wave. At the end of 99, you could feel that, it became much more difficult to raise money. So we were like in this last slot.
Okay. And so who'd you raise your money from?
We raised money from Deutsche Bank.
Yeah. Company that's now struggling a lot. But at the time was impressive to get funding from Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So especially if you're a payments company, so you got your payment, it's time now to go out and actually, you know what, tell the story about how you demoed it to investors and what happened when you were trying to use the phone.
So we had the, our MVP ready just 10 minutes before we went into our investor meeting. And I was so nervous and so excited because I didn't know if it would work, and we were in the parking lot. We used this MVP. We're like, yeah. So I played the merchant. So then Paybox asked me, well, from whom do you want to request money? And I was so nervous. I didn't punch in my friend's number. So he would expect the call. I punched in my own number. And I would actually receive that phone call. Yeah. So I was actually that MVP was asking, requesting money from myself.
Yeah. You were because you were so nervous about doing this.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, let me talk about my first sponsor and then get back into the rest of the story. My first sponsor, Eckhart, is a company you need to know about. It's a company called TopTal for hiring developers. I'm actually going to back away from that ad for a moment and talk about one of my earlier sponsors. It was Shopify. And I remember interviewing Toby and said to Toby, why are you sponsoring with me? Toby was a founder of Shopify. And Toby said, you know, we're kind of a new company. We know your audience may not be a good fit for Shopify yet because your audience can go and create their own online stores because they're developers. Your audience can use different open source tools to create their own online stores because they're tech savvy. But your audience, he said to me, is also the people that everybody else turns to when they wonder, how should I set up a store? Everybody else turns to because they're wondering, how do I get my online store built? And so that worked for him, right? A lot of my people ended up making referrals to Shopify. And look at how big Shopify is. I'm not saying because of us it grew. It's because of that strategy, because he understood that if he reaches people who everyone turns to because they are the authorities, he can then get to the people who are his customers. I think TopTal is doing the same thing. They're recognizing that, yes, many people in my audience are going to sign up for TopTal. In fact, many of my interviewees are saying, I'm hiring developers from TopTal. We're talking about the founder of Grasshopper, Heaton Shaw, the founder of FYI and formerly Kissmetrics, Neil Patel, the founder of multiple companies now. Neil Patel Digital, I think, is the name of his company. Anyway, lots of people have, but they're also recognizing if you're in my audience, many people will come to you and say, well, how do I get this built? And they are going to futz around with developers that are inexpensive but not very good when what they should be doing is going to the best of the best developers. If that's who you're going after, if that's who your friends, if that's who your contacts are looking for, send them, head over yourself to toptal.com/mixergy. This is not the cheapest developers online. This is the best developers online at a reasonable price because often they're working internationally and they don't have to pay Silicon Valley prices for homes, for school, for food, for everything else. So where do you go? toptal.com/mixergy. When you use that URL, Eckhart, even you, when you use that URL, you are going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. Think about that. And a no-risk trial period. If you're not happy, Eckhart, you just say, listen, this didn't work out the way I wanted. They will not take your money or they will not charge you for it. But what they will do is still pay the developer because they're mensches, because they want to make sure that the developer gets taken care of. To get the details, go to top is on top of your head, tal is in talent, toptal.com/mixergy. Oh, you will thank me and your friends will thank you. They'll love you for doing it. Let's continue on with the story. You built your first version. You got some funding. Things are working out. It's time now for you to go out and get customers. Or is that what you did first? Or did you end up going and building a big and big bigger and bigger team?
Well,
be open.
I think I have to admit we built a bigger team, and actually we went out in Germany. We went to the German market and we launched the German market. And actually there it was still decent. And it took us 5 months to build the proposition and go out into the market and with a nice marketing strategy. And actually eBay Germany became one of our anchor merchants. So that was certainly.
So you got eBay Germany and then got it. Wow. How'd you get eBay Germany?
eBay Germany, the nice thing, the nice use case, the way we convinced them was basically after you use Paybox for the authentication of the payment, we send an SMS as a notification, hey, the payment was done. To the merchant who was selling on eBay.
Yep.
And that was in those early days, that was basically the notification to the merchant, hey, I was paid, I can now ship it. And so shipping was the merchant typically shipped a day earlier than normal.
Oh, it wasn't that eBay needed this authentication. They were comfortable doing their own authentication, or they actually had lots of other tools. They were using PayPal, encouraging people to use stuff.
They were using PayPal, that was even before they were using PayPal. They used Paybox in Germany for the authentication, but at the same time, the second benefit coming with it was that the merchant got the notification, and then the merchant
Right, that was the thing that they liked. They wanted the notification. But Eckhart, as I remember it, eBay didn't encourage people to use payment. They didn't have payment built in. They would say to their people, to their auction merchants, go use whatever you want. Figure out a way to get paid. Get paid by a check. Do whatever you want. We're not even in that business of figuring it out, right? So what was your partnership with them then?
I think it was the early days. And there, I think every country was pretty independent. And mm-hmm. German payment space is very particular, and we also because it's more direct debit, it's less credit card, and it took some days during those times to get a payment process. So I think it was like the German situation allowing that.
So in Germany, it was different. Were they recommending you guys? Were they building you in? What did you get them to commit to?
No, they were building us in for.
Whenever a merchant would go onto their platform, start to auction something like this vintage looking robot, if I were going to go and put that on eBay would say to me, accept payment from Paybox?
Yeah, well, the consumer and the consumer could sign up and say, I want to pay with Paybox on eBay Germany. Mm-hmm. We paid actually a referral fee for every consumer. We paid that to
you. You paid them.
We paid that to eBay, and there was also financial incentive behind that.
Got it. And then, did you also give them a lump sum money up front?
I don't remember. I don't think so.
Okay. A lot of these bigger companies were taking advantage of smaller startups at the time. They said, "Hey, you need some reputation from us."
What are you gonna say? I remember we paid a big lump sum to AOL at that point in time.
AOL was big on that. And what did you get for that? They give you like a tab on their site or something useless?
Not a lot.
What were they supposed to give you?
I think they were supposed to give us some 100,000, 300,000 consumer signups, and we got like maybe 10,000 or something like that.
But they weren't guaranteeing it, so you didn't get any of your money back.
Correct.
Yeah, no. And you know what they were doing was they recognized that people were so hungry for credibility, and they so believed that they were going to get rich fast that, or flip the company to somebody else and get rich fast, that they said, yeah, partner up with us, get your press release out there into the world, and go figure out how you can go public with that or get more money from that. But they were clearly taking advantage of startups, right?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you actually had a client and then another partnership with AOL. And then at some point early on, you started growing your team really fast. Am I right?
Yeah, so what happened after the German launch, and we did TV advertising even, because we were so well funded. What happened after the launch, Deutsche Bank got so excited about it and said, well, we have to do this across Europe. And they sent us a truckload of consultants. And I said, well, you now do Paybox in four other markets, which was Austria, Sweden, the UK, and Spain. And then we had this truckload of consultants. We really weren't sure who was paying for them. And we were, instead of like focusing and building our plan diligently and what we should do, we just started to roll out. Money was not the problem. And I think we did all the mistakes that you do if you have too much money and no time.
What's one big mistake that you have, if you have two, that you made in retrospect?
For example, in retrospect, we built our organizational structure. We built tax entities, so everything was tax optimized. We had separate entities in every country, holdings in between, so that we could. Because the idea.
Got it. You're setting up such a structure for something big that will come down the road. Meanwhile, you don't have the customers to support it yet.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And on a small level, I feel like a lot of people do that too, that they end up getting all the computer equipment and all the software that they need, and they get all the.
All the patent work and all the registrations. And instead of like, well, can we focus and can we get something?
I wonder if it was. Hey, these guys are smart. It's Deutsche Bank. They believe in us. They think we're going big. I should listen to them. Was it that too?
It was a bit that I like that too. Yeah. It was. And so we,
It was. You told Brian Benson, our producer, we had 200 people, even though we didn't really close any business. All these countries that we worked with, all five of them, each one had their own CEO because we thought that we needed that. This is what you were going for. And you had just a bit more than zero revenue. Then 9/11 happened, right? Planes start crashing into buildings here in the US. What happened as a result of that for your business?
Well, as a result, we could feel we were at 200 people, right? And the idea had been that we wanted to have investors in every country, and that we needed separate management boards in each country. And so we had all these tax holdings and all the management boards. And obviously, well, it was very professional. The hiring process was completely professional. And then we found ourselves with 200 people, right? So investors, everything was ready so that investors could roll in into all these countries, pleasing our management boards would please them on a local level. And then, 9/11 happened. And we could feel, oh, shit.
Yeah.
the world will not be the same anymore. And you could feel that everyone got so protective and we could feel, well, we have done here a bit too much, and we have over-engineered the entire organization. And so as a consequence of that, we also asked by Deutsche Bank restructure. And then we did our first restructuring, and we closed basically the subsidiaries on local level, all those management boards that we had just established. We had to let go 140 people on one day. So we restructured to 60. That was really tough, but we had a good company culture. I was responsible for the UK. I brought that message to the UK team. We got really drunk that day.
Couldn't have been easy.
It was like that. And then what we found out actually is that with 60 people, we were more productive than with 200, right?
Really?
at the end of the day, because we organized us in a way that we had like central roles, and instead of decentralizing everything into one country. Right. We had central heads for operational things, it did work really well with 60 people.
I do find that happens in business a lot and in life, that we accumulate all this stuff, all these people, all these everything, and then when we're forced to cut back, it feels so dramatic and painful, but in the end, we actually are happier. I imagine that there are a lot of people who go from bigger houses, scale down to smaller houses, and in that scale down, they realize, I had all this junk that was just weighing me down emotionally, weighing me down psychically. It's still not easy, though. I want to get into the emotional part of entrepreneurship, too. You were on a scuba vacation at the time, am I right? Scuba diving. When
there was a second scale down.
Oh, this was a second scale down?
The first scale down was in after 9/11. The second scale down was actually Deutsche Bank. Well, at that point in time, they changed their strategy and they said, actually, what they're closing down these days is investment banking, right? They said, we do investment banking now and we're getting rid of all our subsidiaries. So they said that was end of 2003. And they said, well, we're selling off Paybox with another company. And I was on my first vacation after 2.5 years. And I learned scuba diving, and I had Saturday morning was my first scuba dive. And Friday night, I was just expecting the call, hey, we're selling Paybox to this company or to this company. There were two alternatives. And I was just expecting that message. Is it company A buying us or company B buying us? What we received was a message. Actually, it's none of them. We want to close you down, but a Deutsche Bank subsidiary cannot go bankrupt. How much money do you need to close down the company properly?
Wow.
And I was like, oh, no way. I did not expect that. And then I went onto my scuba dive the next morning, and first time in the Atlantic Ocean, going down 30 meters. And I said, I'm going to stay here.
Don't even want to come back up.
No.
Why didn't you say, okay, Deutsche Bank is going to close it down? I have an excuse. It's not me. It's Deutsche Bank. Never do business with a big bank. They always want to shut you down. It's a story you could tell the world, and you could go off and start something new. Why didn't you say, great, I'll accept this and start fresh?
We were so into it. We were in so much love with what we had done. We could see we were really on a mission, and we did not expect it that day. Yeah. Retrospectively, actually, it was the best thing that happened to us. Yeah. I was very low that day in the Atlantic, but, it was actually a good thing because
I'm going to get into why that was a good thing. I'm intentionally cutting you off before you finish the sentence it started with because, but why didn't you say I'm done then? I get to go and scuba dive. I get to find my new life. I get to go back in management consulting. Why did you decide I have to stick with this business? What made you, because that's a big decision for a lot of us to decide, do we close it down or start over?
Yeah. Well, I think there were two things. First of all, we had already in Austria, we'd already built with one of the operators a very good lighthouse showcase, and we could. I don't hear you. You're on mute, Andrew.
Sorry, I'm interrupting you. What does that mean, a lighthouse showcase? I saw you tell Brian, our producer, that.
Yeah, so we had already built with Mobilcom in Austria, who was the leading operator there. They had become actually the local investor in Austria into PayBox, and we did mobile payment in the internet. We did mobile payment for gambling. We did mobile payment in vending machines. We had mobile payment for in-cab payments. So for parking. So we had the entire portfolio of mobile payment, and we could see this is happening, this is working. And we just wanted to replicate those solutions elsewhere.
Ah, that even though you hadn't made it big enough for Deutsche Bank to want to keep supporting you, even though, as I understand it, you weren't even profitable, you saw that there was a little bit of traction. You said, we can't give up on this. We could, if it worked here, we can take it to other places. Am I right?
And you're right. Right.
Ah, yeah. Got it. Okay. All right. And so you believed in it enough. They didn't. And you were starting to say why that was actually the best thing that could have happened to you. What happened as a result?
Well, what happened, Deutsche Bank, we call it a management buyout with a negative purchase price. Actually, Deutsche Bank gave us enough money to close down the company. And we restructured to 30 people then, and we kept the entire tech team. We had been diluted so much already. Deutsche Bank was somewhere 70 or 80% at that point in time. And all of a sudden, the founder team got back the entire company. We had 100% again. We spent some of the money to obviously restructure further, but then we didn't close down with the other team. We restructured PayBox repositioned into B2B business. And our largest client was already our investor in Austria.
Who is that?
That was Mobilcom. That was the telecom operator that has this Lighthouse Showcase.
And then how much of your company did you own before this whole transition, and how much did you own afterwards?
Well, before Deutsche Bank had put so much money into the company, they were already at 70 or 80% at the point in time. Yeah.
And then 70 or 80%, which, by the way, was the way the business was done back then. Entrepreneur had very little, and then even that was super meaningful. And then after the restructuring?
Yeah, we got to 100% back.
Got 100% of your business back? I just yelled into the mic. You did?
Yes.
You and your co-founder. Wow. And did you have to pay them anything to get that back?
No, we got money to close down the company. We had enough money, yeah, to close down, basically. They gave us they said, we don't want to worry with this anymore, but we can't let you go bankrupt, right? It's a Deutsche Bank subsidiary.
Okay.
You have to sign. You spend the money wisely to restructure and close down. Yeah, but they wanted to close
you
down.
Took the money that they gave you to restructure and close down, and you used it to
the company down. Around. They gave us the money to close down, but we didn't close down. We just restructured. Right?
How much money did they give you?
It was another 1 million, something like that.
1 million. Okay, which is tiny for a payments company. By the way, this is not the first time that I've heard an entrepreneur say this. Sahil Avinya from Gumroad was in a similar situation. He was on an upward trajectory. All the investors believed in him. Everyone, especially him, thought that he was going to make it big. He believed he was going to be a billionaire because of this business. And then the company couldn't grow anymore. He couldn't raise another dollar. The company started to flatline. He had to, I think, lay people off. And his investors just said, we don't believe in you anymore, and we want to get you off our books. He said, tell you what, give us a dollar and we'll give you your shares back. And so he started buying back his shares for like pennies because they just wanted to be done with him. And then he turned his business around. I did this whole interview about how he did it. It's available on Mixergy for anyone who wants to listen to it. And his business now has turned around. And I have to say, the investors aren't pissed that they didn't like get rich off of this. They're happy for him from what I can see. I imagine that it's still too small for them, but it's a big win for him. All right. So you ended up getting money back and getting your company back, and then partnering up with, I forget the name of the company again, the mobile company?
With Mobilcom in Austria.
And they gave you money, and then you gave them equity in your business too?
Well, they already owned, we actually gave them all the shares on in PayBox Austria. So they owned the consumer business in Austria, and we basically became their technology provider.
So Eckhart, that's the thing that I couldn't understand as I was trying to follow your history. It seems like there are these different businesses that weren't owned by you that were divested in different ways. Can you talk about that? What happened?
The local country, well, there was PayBox Austria who built all these nice this nice mobile payment ecosystem in Austria. We, at that point in time, when Deutsche Bank divested, basically we cut a deal with Mobilcom. Okay, you are becoming the 100% shareholder of PayBox Austria. You run the consumer business in Austria. And we in Germany, we are the holding or the tech team, and we were called PayBox.net.
Okay, and those were the only ones, the only divestiture that you had, or was there another one?
No, we had to close basically all the other country organizations.
Got it. Okay.
And at that point in time, we renamed PayBox.net. We renamed it to PayBox Solutions more to reflect the B2B business.
Got it. And that's why I keep seeing different types of PayBox over the years as I look through Internet Archive to get a sense of where you were. Okay. So you had these customers. Did you transition your business? What happened next with the business?
Well, obviously, we were four founders at that point in time that who got the money back. We were all a bit stressed after those years, and we weren't. And then we won another RFP from Mastercard. Basically, the day after Deutsche Bank said, we want to close down. We also won an RFP, so that was the second customer we got. We won a big project in Kuwait, so we had enough projects to feed the tech team for 2 years. And we said as the management team, okay, let's give our product managers here, the second level, a chance to run the business, because among the founders, there was tension. We couldn't agree. It was not enough to feed the four of us. So what I did, I actually worked for Mobilcom in Austria for almost 3 years.
You took a side job.
I took a side job. Yes, and I worked for Mobilcom, which was basically our biggest customer. Uh-huh. I worked for Mobilcom and helped building that ecosystem. And for example, we negotiated the first mobile payment consortium between operators in the world. There were four mobile operators plus one bank involved, and we negotiated that consortium over a certain amount of time.
All right, I'll take a break, talk about my second sponsor. Then I want to come back in and see how this evolved and then why you sold and then whether it was actually a meaningful exit for you. The second sponsor is a company called HostGator. If you're hosting any website at all, go over to HostGator.com/Mixergy. You'll get the lowest price possible. And what I love about HostGator is you get complete control of your site. Yes, with one click, you can install WordPress and other platforms. But if you don't like HostGator, or if in the future there's a better option out there, you just take all your stuff and move it to the other hosting company. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Super low price, easy to get up and started. And frankly, you'll be supporting the work here at Mixergy. They've been doing great for you. They've been doing well for me, really well for me. And I appreciate everyone who goes through and uses my URL. Yes, you'll get a low price, but it's already low even without that URL. And you'll get all that stuff that they give you, like unlimited disk space, unmetered this, like tons of stuff. But in the end, what you're really doing is saying, I believe in the work that Andrew's doing here. I want to support him by using the company, the hosting company that supports him. So HostGator.com/MIXERGY. Go with that gator. All right. What finally happened that allowed you guys to grow, to take off, to stop with this difficult process?
So at the end of 2005, company ran into a problem again, and then we decided, well, it our strategy didn't really work. And we decided that I would come back and run the company as a CEO with a B2B solution, with a B2B positioning.
Eckhart, why didn't it work? What was the part that didn't work? It was going consumer to consumer?
No, it was also the B2B part that wasn't working, and there wasn't really a sales DNA in the team that was in charge.
Okay.
And the sales didn't work. So they didn't grow the customer base significantly, and we could see that we would run into more problems. So that's why we decided that we had to change something.
Okay. All right. And so you're saying that you came in, that wasn't working, you decided to change it. What's the change that you made?
We put a lot of focus on sales, and the projects we were selling were at that point in time were big projects, all between starting from 200-300K going up to 2 or 3 million.
Okay.
So it was B2B selling, and at that point in time, or even today, if you have to answer an RFP for a bank or for an operator, right, it can easily take you 2 weeks with a few people to answer these things. And we hadn't, there was nothing that we could reuse. And so we really built a sales structure into it.
You didn't even have a sales structure to respond to an RFP request for a proposal from a business that could be your customer?
Absolutely. There was nothing.
Wow. Okay. And so you started to work on that?
We started working on that, and it took us a few months. And with every RFP, obviously, we learned, and we took that process down from answering an RFP in 2 weeks to 2 days, and also making sure the quality would work much better. So what you call about today, what you call funnel and nurturing, we built the PowerPoints at that point in time that we needed to say what is the company opportunity that you have, what are the case studies, what is the architecture behind this, what is the product we're selling with price list configurators and all these things, because it was really complex stuff. Yeah? We were selling, for example, mobile remittance solutions between the US and Colombia. We had Royal Bank of Canada as a customer who wanted a person-to-person payment. We had Singtel in Singapore as a customer who wanted to have an internet payment. We had customers in Africa. So every solution was different, and we really needed to get to common grounds on how to sell this.
And did that work out?
It did work out, yeah. We were invited because everyone in the world at that point in time who wanted to go into mobile payments, they knew two installations. They knew M-Pesa from Africa, which is still there, and they knew Paybox in Austria. Yeah, and so that's how we attracted a lot of awareness.
Wait, how did they know about you? Because you did what?
Because everyone in the world who wanted to get into mobile payments, they became aware of Paybox in Austria.
How? So, how did they know about Paybox in Austria?
Because the ecosystem in Austria was so immense, right? We had all the gambling, the betting, the vending machines, everything was...
Austria is a fairly small country that's not known for pioneering technology that the world treks out to learn from.
But the nice thing is that Austria has a population of about 10 million, mm-hmm. and 4 million of those are in the area of Vienna. So if you want to do something, you do it in Vienna, and you have a nice reputation. You can build a nice scale-up solutions nicely there.
What did you do to get the word out, to let people know that mobile payment was working there?
We went to lots of conferences, especially the Mobile World Congress, which happens always in February in Barcelona these days. It was in Cannes in France those days, and in conferences, and trying to get speaker slots on the conferences on the first days, and then making sure that you follow up on the people who attended your presentation, the guerrilla marketing. So it was a lot of foot legwork.
And showing, this is what's working here, we can bring this to the rest of the world. Got it. By the way, I see that there are Estonian companies that are doing that now, that Estonia has gotten really tech savvy and they've created this whole thing, including like move their government online and all that. And I see a lot of Estonian companies now at conferences doing what you're talking about, saying, this is working in Estonia, let us bring it to you. The other thing that I want to highlight is your advice of speaking the first day is gold. Unless you're a nervous speaker who needs to see what others are saying before you feel comfortable with yours, give your presentation first day, then you're the
first day morning.
First day morning, right? When people are all attending before they start to break up, and then after that, people get to know you, and because they know you, they're more likely to have conversations with you right there at the conference. Absolutely, the best way to do it.
For a shy guy like me, it's much easier to walk up than to those people.
I didn't think of that. Right, because they're coming to you. Even at the end, I will even say I will be here and invite them to come. Let's talk afterwards.
Worth a lot. It's really worth a lot.
Yeah, that's absolutely a great way to do it. Why did you decide to sell your business?
What we could feel already at the beginning of 2008 was that the mobile apps were coming. iPhone was coming. And we were brilliant when it was voice technology and SMS technology and all like there was USSD technology on the phone. But we could feel that because we were so tight always from a financial perspective, mm-hmm. that investments to build up the capacity to build good apps. And we could already see companies that were much ahead of us in doing that. And we felt, well, maybe it is better to look around and sell at this point in time. That's also where we got the traction from Sybase early in 2018, February. And then over the summer, we could see the crisis coming, right? The big crisis.
It already started to hit, the big financial crisis.
Yeah, it was coming in the summer. We had signed our first term sheet in June. And then people were saying, okay, can you feel the crisis? And said, no, I was so confident. I said, no, it doesn't impact us. And but in September, I was thinking already differently.
That you were starting to feel it.
Yeah.
And you say you get your first term sheet from, from the company that acquired you guys, from Sybase.
Yeah, we got that in June.
Before we all realize, hey, things are really dangerous right now.
They did due diligence over the summer. Due diligence went okay. We got into September, but they also could see the crisis coming, right? So then they presented the final contract, and we took a hit on the term sheet.
Because how much was it supposed to be, and then what was it afterwards? The acquiring price.
I think they wanted to negotiate us down by 20% at a point in time.
Okay.
We got it back to 10%, something like
that. Okay. All right.
It was okay. I think it was fair.
That makes sense. I mean, we're really seeing the country fall apart and the rest of the world too. I remember actually seeing banks in San Francisco with lines of people waiting to get their money out because they were worried about it. I Googled it right now to see when this happened. According to Wikipedia, they're calling it the financial crisis of 2007, 2008, because by 2007, it was already starting to impact people. All right. How'd you find your acquirer? What was the process to get Sybase interested?
I think it was, we built it up over a few years. Also on being on the conferences, we made sure Sybase was actually not only a database company at that point in time. They were also in terms of sending SMS, text messages, they were the seventh largest sender of text messages in the world. And so we were always looking for those strategic partners.
Why were they sending so many text messages?
I was part of one of their business units. One of the business units was basically
enabling other businesses to send out SMS?
Yes.
Got it. And they were also doing mobile payments via SMS at the time, weren't they?
Those were mobile payments on the phone bill where they was charging for content. Yeah.
And got it. So if somebody wanted a ringtone or something, they could pay and then the bill would come through their phone bill. Got it. Sybase did that.
They did that. Yeah.
That was really clever. That was clever at the time because people don't pay attention to small changes in their phone bill and they accept payments that way. It was also an acceptable way of getting payments. Yeah, it's so shocking that the phone companies lost that.
So we were really complimentary to them. The transaction made a lot of sense for them.
How well did you personally do from that exit? You owned half the business at the time?
We were down to three founders at that point in time. I owned about 30%.
30%. All right. So it was meaningful. We talked about what you did afterwards. You took a vacation. Let's talk about what you're doing now. Why LeanCase? Why did you decide this is where I'm going to spend my energy? This is my next big business.
Well, I did a second startup with a team from Israel in the mobile authentication space. And we sold that to Ping Identity about 4 or 5 years ago.
What was this? Was this Excels?
That was Excels. Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the product now is today's Ping ID. At that point in time, we presented lots of business cases, our model to VCs. And I'm a bit of a number cruncher and I fall in love with the SaaS model. And I downloaded a template here from David Skok. And I loved it and I built
from
it
who?
Up. David Skok from Matrix Partners.
Okay.
He's one of the really SaaS gurus. Then I had this nice model. And I tried to present this to VCs and the VCs liked the model, but they could tell that I had no clue about what the type of data I was entering.
Okay.
I knew Joanne was, but I didn't have access, I didn't have the experience where I realized the benchmarks. And I said, this is crazy. Everyone is starting to do this over, and every entrepreneur goes through this process. They have to build a model. They have to know the data that they find in Excel. And since then, I'm also working as an M&A advisor. We do business angel investments, and I work in a small VC company, and I see this process from an investment perspective. And as an investor, you're getting 10 spreadsheets and you open 8 and they're full of errors or too simplistic. And you open the 9th one, which is completely over-engineered, and the 10th one is a good spreadsheet. But even if you had 10 nice spreadsheets, right, you can't compare them. Everyone is using different definitions. And no one is getting to that important question of unit economics. Is your customer lifetime value significantly higher than your cost of customer acquisition? Right? It's difficult to do. So that's why I said, if I ever have time, I put something like that into the cloud, and that is LeanCase. And LeanCase is really solving you the problem of business planning on the revenue side, right? Every business has the same three questions. How do I create leads? How do I convert leads into paying customers? And how do I grow my paying customers? And that's something which is really hard to model on for someone in Excel, and often it takes them weeks. And we bring that process into the cloud, and it takes less than 2 hours.
And once somebody has that, do they still need to keep this going? They've raised their money, they've created their financial plan. Do you lose them as a customer?
That's a good question. We're working on tracking functionality. So we will have tracking functionality, and LeanCase is a tool to improve the communication process between the decision maker and the startup.
Okay.
We want to also improve that communication on a monthly basis, where you report your numbers against your plan, your actuals against your plan. So that's one thing. And we're not selling LeanCase to startups. We're positioning startups on the, I call it the decision maker side, consultants who do business cases for clients, investors who have a portfolio of startups, accelerators who have a portfolio of startups. And they have every batch they can renew their licenses.
You're selling it to people who work with lots of startups because
the LeanCase would be really difficult.
Yeah. Do individual entrepreneurs buy it too?
They can also buy it too. Yes.
Okay. All right. It's lean-case.com. What happened? Was LeanCase without the hyphen available? Let me see. LeanCase without the hyphen.
It wasn't available. That's some luggage you can buy.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's
a suitcase you can buy. Yeah.
Is it? I don't know. This company hasn't touched their website in years from what I can see. All right, so lean-case or lean-case, you know, put one of those lines in between the two words, leancase.com. And congratulations, Eckhard, for doing so well.
Thank you, Andrew. It was a pleasure being here on your show.
I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first is HostGator for hosting your website. Go to hostgator.com/mixergy. And the second, if you need to hire developers or your friends need to hire developers, go to or send them to toptal.com/mixergy. Finally, these interviews are going great. We've done a lot of research as a team. We prepared. Eckhard got to talk to one of our producers. We internally did a lot of research to make sure he was the person that he says he is and all that. And the reason we could do all that is thanks to all the Mixergy Premium members. If you're a Mixergy Premium member, I talk a lot about how you get all these courses as part of your membership. I talk a lot about how you get all these advantage from getting courses taught by proven entrepreneurs. What I should talk more about is how much we get from it. All you premium members are supporting the research, the effort, the time that goes into putting these interviews together. Thank you so much. And to anyone who's interested, go to mixergy.com/premium to see what this whole thing is about. Eckhard, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.